Dr. J, here we are again.
Back again.
Making the magic.
Making it happen. Glad you're here this time.
Indeed. Indeed. It's nice to show up for once, get a word in.
That's right. What we're referring to is I got to record a bonus episode while you were gone.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
It was good.
Yeah.
Another in the Principles series.
No, it's not. It's not in the Principals series. We love the interview with the Principals. That was great. Felicity Marlowe and Mark Ramsey. But this was with Jonathan Bradford. So it's a bonus episode. But yeah, it's good to have you back.
Flatmates. Our guest coming up, her husband. I know her from back in the Bathurst days because her husband used to live flat with my brother and some of the other Christian guys.
Interesting.
Who, by some sort of miraculous work of the Holy Spirit, have all managed to find beautiful women to marry because they were the festiest guys. In Bathurst.
In Bathurst, yeah, okay.
And they were just disgusting. Like they had, I think one of them had like a pair of mice at some point, like pet mice. Got sick of them and just put their cage down in the basement and forgot all about it.
Oh my goodness.
And obviously came back 6 months later and discovered 8 million mice down in the basement because they'd all bred.
No.
They had one of those outdoor kiddie pools, like those plastic kind of things.
Okay.
And it killed a big circle in of the course. Backyard. So then the agent, real estate agents coming around for the inspection. So they chuck the pool away and just spray paint green the big dead grass circle in the backyard, just spray painted it green.
Yeah. I find that you put young guys together, especially if it's their first time out of home, and it's a bit of a miracle that we find people who want to live with us. Yeah. Did you have to do something to impress Marilee to show her that you were the real deal?
No, mostly the beard. The beard did all most of the work. I just followed where it went.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, it leads the way.
It leads the way. Have you ever shaved it?
Not since we've been together. I'm not allowed.
Oh, my.
Because she says I'll look like a 12-year-old, so it's here to stay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I've got to maintain it so I don't look like a drug dealer or a pirate, but it has to stay. Now, in church news, before we get to our guest Anna Hutchins from Open Doors, we had the meeting on the weekend.
Yep. Big thing coming out of the meeting was we're going to have a combined Good Friday service. So this is pretty cool. So Vineyard and Strong Nation and us are going to hold a combined Good Friday service 9:30 in the morning on Good Friday at McQuaid Park in Windsor. And Rick Burrell at Strong Nation invited me to share the word and invited our church to join their churches. I don't know if any other churches are coming along as well, hopefully. And yeah, we'll have our Good Friday service as a combined service in the community. It's a great witness for Christ. Take communion together. Yeah, so we really encourage everyone to come on out to that.
You were only just chatting with Pastor Chris the other Sunday night after church about coordinating stuff with other local churches and stuff, and he said things were in the works. So.
Yeah, well, you knew it was coming. Your spidey senses were activated, huh? Yeah,
I get it done.
Yeah, but that was the main thing coming out of the meeting. And then Easter, Good Friday, Hymns Are Us, it's all sort of coming down the pike here in March, so pretty exciting.
Big month ahead, good stuff. Well, enough talk about meetings, Dr. J. I do know that you love the subject of meetings, but moving on, as we mentioned earlier, we've got a return guest coming back, Anna Hutchins from Open Doors.
Woo!
Welcome.
I have to cheer for myself.
I think she's come back more than anyone else.
Which is once. I think you're the first repeat. Actually, no, you're the first non-staff member repeat. So welcome back. Yeah. We're really glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you.
No one else has accepted the invitation.
I wonder who it is, Arden. Not naming names, but
sounds like a tough record to have.
No, but we're glad that you're here. We bumped into each other just a couple of weeks ago. It was at the. Do you call it a premiere? It's kind of weird. I don't know. What do you call it? Like
launch?
The launch?
World Watch List launch?
Yes. World Watch List launch. That's a tongue twister. Can you share with people who maybe are not familiar with Open Doors and what the World Watch List is? Can you maybe unpack a little bit for us what that event's all about?
Sure. Yeah. So I work for Open Doors, which some people may remember. Brother Andrew, God's smuggler, he established Open Doors. And so they care for persecuted Christians around the world. And each year they launch what's called the World Watch List, and really it's looking at where is it most dangerous to be a Christian. It focuses on the top 50 countries where it is most dangerous to believe in Jesus and looks at what life is like for Christians in those countries.
One thing that I took away from that was all the work that goes into categorizing what kind of persecution we mean, which I think is really helpful. I went home, I told my kids, I said, kids, listen to this. There's smash persecution and squeeze persecution. Am I getting that right? Is that?
You listened well. I'm impressed.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, they were great, great stories, great things that we heard. But what do we mean by smash persecution and what's squeeze persecution?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think historically we've often categorized persecution as the martyrs, someone dying for their faith, or perhaps being imprisoned wrongly because they believe in Jesus. We often think of it as harsh abuse. And definitely that is persecution that is happening around the world. We see that particularly in places like Nigeria, the most violent place to live as a Christian, in different places in Africa, and certainly in regimes like in North Korea, people are imprisoned. They may be at threat of being killed or abused. And so that is smash persecution that is harsh and horrible. What isn't often always talked about is this idea of squeeze persecution. And so it can be somewhat of a silent pressure for people living as a Christian in their country. So for some people, when they find out that they are a Christian, they may be excluded from job opportunities. For children, they may be marked down in their grades. They have sometimes there's areas where they will just have their electricity cut off because they are a Christian and not part of the dominant religion in their community. So it's more of a subtle form of persecution.
And as I understand it, when they calculate the score, if you will, they add those two together. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. They look at those different factors of pressure and violence. So how much pressure is in the community and how much violence is in the community.
What would the top five countries be?
Yeah, so North Korea is number one. It's been sitting at number one for the sort of the last few years. The only time that it got overtaken was when the Taliban invaded Afghanistan and it took its top spot. Somalia sits at number two, so very heavily dominant Muslim nation. There is only a few hundred Christians in that country and it is incredibly difficult to be a Christian in that country. In fact, there's basically zero Christians that are known about because they're all underground and undercover. Libya comes in at number three. Number four is Eritrea, which is quite a small country, but very difficult to be a Christian in that country. Most of the Christians there are actually in prison. And then number five is Yemen, which has a double persecution where they go through famine and drought. They're a very poor country, and then they also get persecuted for their faith as a Christian. So a lot of Muslim-dominated countries, and that is a strong driver of persecution, is Islam.
Now, you used to work with Compassion. That's sort of how we initially got to know you. And you shared a little bit of this last time, but now that you've had more time with Open Doors, you've been doing some work. Tell us, what's your role there at Open Doors? How does that fit into kind of the broader ministry itself? And maybe what are some things that you have had your eyes open to now that you have been in this space for a little while?
Thanks. Yeah. So I lead our supporter experience and marketing team. And really that's just looking at how do we tell the stories of the persecuted church. I think my feeling about the persecuted church is that there isn't much awareness among Christians of what is going on for the body of Christ. And my real sense is that if the church doesn't help the church, then who will? And so how can we get better about being aware of what's going on for Christians in other countries and help to support them? Our real desire is that no Christian suffers alone. And so how do we hear their stories and come along and support and partner with them? I think one of the things which we had been chatting about at this event is typically when you work for a not-for-profit, you're trying to get rid of the thing that you're fighting. So you're trying to eradicate cancer, you're trying to eradicate poverty, you're trying to get rid of domestic violence or trafficking. Persecution is unique because Jesus himself said, whoever wants to live a godly life will be persecuted. And in fact, he says, if you are persecuted, rejoice and be reminded that you are like me and the prophets before you who were persecuted for their faith. We're invited into this suffering, not even as something that we are to endure, but almost a portrait of what it is to be a Christian. Blessed are those who are persecuted, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. So we're in this interesting scenario where we're not actually trying to get rid of the thing that we're fighting against. We're not trying to eradicate persecution, but we want to strengthen Christians as they walk through it.
Yeah, because persecution really does fan the flames of the church, doesn't it?
Does. And I remember a persecuted believer saying, we could get rid of persecution tomorrow. All we need to do is stop talking about Jesus. In the countries that we're in, they're happy for us to be there. as long as we don't talk about Jesus, as long as we don't spread the gospel. But it's actually that these faithful people around the world, despite the threats against them, want to share the good news because they believe it so passionately. And so that's why persecution increases.
Do you experience any kind of disillusionment or dissonance? I don't know, put your own adjective in there. Do you experience any of that when you transition out of your vocational space? And you go into the cafe on a Sunday morning and you pick up your coffee, you know, that's made just the way you like it, with just the milk that you like. And you go and you walk in the doors of your church and you sit and you think, oh, do I like this version of the song? And oh, maybe the drummer's not as tight as the one last week. And like, do you experience that when you think about like what you do vocationally in ministry and then what your experience of the Christian churches, or am I just imagining that?
No, definitely. I mean, driving here, both Jonathan and I were sitting in traffic and you can get frustrated by that. But I've just come from reading a story about a woman who was imprisoned because of her faith in Jesus, and her 2-year-old, who was very unwell, was forced to be in prison with her. And she spent hours on hours being interrogated about other members in her church because they wanted to get more names of the people in her church. And I can feel frustrated about sitting in traffic. So there is definitely that challenge to go, how can we let the stories of what other believers are going through impact our own life? And it's interesting working for Open Doors because you do have a lot of people who want to talk to you about persecution in Australia, that they've been persecuted for their faith. Now, it's never to dismiss the persecution that can go on here. People can be treated differently because they are Christians, and that probably is increasing in Australia. But it is very difficult to compare it to the woman imprisoned, the person who is beaten by her brothers and her father when she becomes a Christian, the pastor who is shot because he was sharing his faith. It puts things in perspective.
And maybe if I can add a tack on question to that, have you found your own personal discipleship impacted? And if so, how?
Definitely. I think when I came to Open Doors, I thought, well, if suffering is meant to be the normal path of the Christian, why aren't I experiencing suffering? Mm. And for me, I realized it's because I'm not sharing my faith. I'm not being uncomfortable. So of course I'm not being persecuted because I'm not putting myself in situations where it's going to be awkward. It's going to be embarrassing to say that I believe in Jesus or share with something with people that I know that they're going to turn their nose up at. Here are these people who could be killed for not denying Jesus, and yet they do it with boldness and passion, but I'm scared to share with my neighbor. So it's definitely challenged me in that way.
Yeah, there was that video series we did as a church over, I think it must have been over COVID, and there were interviews with African pastors, and they were praying for the Western church because we were just so lazy and complacent.
Yeah.
And they felt sorry for us of where we'd ended up. Yeah,
there's a pastor in China who says, pray that persecution never leaves China. He says, because we don't want our faith to become shallow like you or yours in the Western nations. Yeah. He's like, persecution brings us depth and reliance upon God. Yeah.
Mm. Where does, because China used to be kind of the big one. You were talking about awareness before. China used to be the one that we sort of knew of when it came to persecution. Where do they sit on the list these days?
Yeah, so it's interesting. The nature of persecution in China has changed. I'm looking at my list here. Oh, here, they're number 19. So yes, I think the persecution in China has been a perfect example of a nation that has probably changed more from that smash persecution where all of their pastors were imprisoned, all of they're at threat of abuse and suffering, where it's become much more that squeeze persecution. So now you can operate your church as long as you don't mind being monitored, as long as you don't mind having the government having CCTV cameras all across your church. The registered churches have to submit their sermons to the government before their Sunday service, and if the government requests changes, they have to make them. The most amount of CCTV cameras in the entire world is found in China.
Yeah.
And so obviously the church is going underground, but if those underground churches are found, then yeah, that's when sort of the persecution comes. So it's still there, but not like in the 1980s and 90s.
How do you go with being in a position to relay these stories? And I'm curious what it's like on the other end. I imagine Open Doors has a ministry of walking alongside those who are being persecuted. What does that look like? Maybe you can't be as specific as you would be, but what does it look like generally for Open Doors to support somebody in one of these countries that's high on the list, and what would they be experiencing as someone who is being persecuted when Open Doors comes along?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that's what's interesting about the nature of the work is that it is different, because what we want to do is help Christians hold on. So whether they're experiencing that smash persecution or that squeeze persecution, we want them to be able to continue in their faith. We want them to continue to be evangelists, sharing the good news, continue to be a light in what is very dark places. And so in those smash incidences, I mean, just last year in Manipur, India, there was violent attacks on Christians in this city in India. And so their houses were burned down, churches were burned down, livelihoods were lost. And so our help looked like was very practical. We were giving emergency relief, helping rebuild livelihoods, rebuild homes, rebuild churches, giving them emergency food. In other areas where it is more subtle, we might, for example, there's an area in Ethiopia where children are just discriminated against because of their Christian faith. And so we have built churches there which are open to all of the community, but it ensures that they're able to get an education and be treated fairly and kept safe in that area. So we kind of have three different pillars where you've got your real practical help. We do a lot of trauma care and counseling, which is all about obviously helping people recover, particularly in African countries where Boko Haram come through. There's a lot of abuse and attacks, helping people recover from that. And then the third one is really providing Bibles and discipleship. So one of the key pillars is that a lot of these people, particularly people who have become Christians from a Muslim background, are very new in their faith. They become a Christian, all of a sudden they're disowned by their family, they're persecuted, they're suffering, and they don't have a framework to understand that persecution. And so even for us to come in and give training to say, Jesus says that this will happen, this is not because you're doing anything wrong, you can rejoice in this suffering and this is how you can get through it. It gives them a biblical framework of how to understand that persecution and stay strong throughout it.
What about with the crisis in Gaza at the moment? Do Open Doors have a role there? Are they on the ground over there?
Yeah, so basically we're working with Christians in Israel and Palestine in the Gaza region, and really just looking to help. It's mainly around emergency relief and care. We're sort of starting to transition now into more long-term support, looking at homes and livelihoods and how we can help rebuild the community, and a lot of trauma counselling and a lot of support in that area.
Open Doors is a global organization, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Does Australia have its own kind of vision and mission right now? Is there something that you guys would like to see as kind of the Australian branch of this organization that for us to focus on?
I mean, our vision is very aligned with the global vision. I think as a whole organization, we want to care for the persecuted church, but we also have a real heart for the church in places like Australia to be strengthened as they support their global brothers and sisters. So some of the transformation that I know I've experienced myself, where parts of the Bible have come alive in ways that they had never before. I've heard the stories of suffering Christians. We want that for the church in Australia as well. How can we increase our boldness and our faith by reading these stories of our brothers and sisters in Christ and not be numb to it, but be challenged and see what faith looks like in those places and then reflect on our own discipleship journey here.
And if somebody wanted to, someone listening to this wanted to support or find out more information, how would you direct them to take some next steps?
Yes, there's lots of information on our website, opendoors.org.au. You can find the World Watch List on the website. You can download the top 50 countries. We've actually got a prayer guide which takes you through those top 50 countries, so you can read a little bit about that country and what it's like for Christians there. And then there's some prayer points on how you can pray for them. And I think it's just a great way of how can you lift your eyes above what Christianity looks like here in Australia and sort of think about what God's doing around the world.
Which is a great segue, I guess, to a very different topic. Did either of you go to Taylor Swift?
Nope.
No. Okay, we're in the minority here.
A sanctified group, I can tell. No, just teasing. No shame if you went to Taylor Swift. But I do find it very interesting. I'm getting updates through my news feed all the time. Like, and now Taylor's plane has taken off. Oh, but it was delayed by, rain on the dawn. And I'm just like, it's so interesting to me, that image of, there's a woman in a jail with a two-year-old who's looking after a kid, and here's another woman whose every movement we are tracking and following. And no shade against Taylor. No issues with her. But it is very interesting, isn't it, how we can be captivated by celebrity, and yet there's other people who will never be celebrities, who God is so near and so present with. It's a very interesting side-by-side piece for me.
It's very interesting you share that, because that woman's story, her name's Simon, she actually shares as part of her testimony that in jail she was reminded of the story of Hagar, where Hagar says, "You are the God who sees me." This woman who's vulnerable, she's abandoned in the desert, the world's forgotten her, but God provides for her. And obviously she calls God by that name, the God who sees me. And that was what Simon, she said, in her jail cell. At one point her daughter was taken away and she said, "It was just me, Jesus, and my daughter's socks." So I just felt the real presence of Jesus in that jail cell with her.
Awesome. All right. Another amazing interview. Thanks for coming along.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Think she'll be back for the third one?
Next season.
Pushing it.
Don't scare her off, Arden. No, so glad you could be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anna Hutchins there from Open Doors. Well, there you have it. She's always got some great stories to tell.
Yeah, it's really fantastic to hear, you know, just about the work that Open Doors is doing, and appreciate her perspective and the things that she had to say. And it's great hearing a bit about her own personal story as well, and how, you know, the crossover between, you know, being in a space where you're listening to the persecuted church around the world and then thinking about the church here in Australia. It was interesting to see those worlds come together, but it did give me a new term. So we talked about smash persecution. We talked about squeeze persecution. I'm going to give you a third one. Tell me if you like it or not. Sleep persecution.
What's sleep persecution?
The devil puts us to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Renders us.
A good reminder of how soft and lazy we can become in the West.
That's right. I found it interesting when she shared that the pastor from China is praying actively that they don't become like us.
Yeah.
Ouch. That's an indictment. Yeah. Hits a bit close to home. And I love that she was vulnerable and said, you know, I'm not sharing my faith as much as I could. Mm. You know, I was sharing my faith. I'm out there putting myself into conversations that might be difficult. Well, then I might experience it more. And that probably holds true for all of us.
Another great episode, I think, in my personal opinion.
And that's all that matters.
Do you agree?
I agree. Stay tuned.
You kind of have to.
I sort of have to. But yeah, more great guests coming up.
It's going to be good.